Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointsTC.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Vladimir Zelensky's whirlwind visit to Ireland must be deemed a success. Yesterday, he met with President Catherine Connolly before delivering his very first in-person address to the Oireachtas, thanking the Irish people for their continued support for the Ukrainian people.
Thank you for your attention to Ukraine and for the fact that Ireland has truly stood the test of time. Thank you for providing home and protection to our people.
He received a huge standing ovation as he entered the chamber, but not everyone was applauding. News Talk political correspondent Sean Defoe joins us now to talk about the trip as it unfolded. Sean, good morning.
Morning, Pat.
So the first trip was to the Áras. I presume, besides a very lengthy entry into the visitor's book, which I presumed was one they made earlier, Anything stirring occurred?
Yeah, well, I actually wasn't in the Áras, Pat. I was in, there's two different pools for covering this, so I was sort of watching from afar as well. But from what I saw of it, as you mentioned, yeah, that entry must have been made prior to Zelensky coming in, because he spent maybe 20 seconds at the book signing a quite impressive signature, in fairness, but not enough time to write the message that he put in there. And again, sort of kicking off a theme, really, of thanking the Irish people. I thought from watching afar that it looked like quite a cold meeting between Elena Zelensky, the president, and our president, Catherine Connolly. And then I spoke to some of the reporters who were actually there and were at it, and they said, well, yeah, they could see where that was coming from. It was less cold than Zelensky was being briefed all the way up to the door of that meeting, literally handing over his phone to an aide as he got out of the car on the talks that were ongoing with the US and the upcoming visit, of course, of yesterday, as it was, of Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner to Moscow. So less maybe cold than he was distracted and thinking about literally the fate of his nation, which is somewhat understandable.
Well, I presume he had been briefed about everything that Catherine Connolly would have said during her campaign. So he would know where she was coming from in terms of her decrying the support that Germany, by rearming, would be offering to Ukraine. So I'm sure he was well aware of that, but wasn't going to make an issue of it.
No, and neither of them were going to make an issue with it. And people were talking about that yesterday morning, and perhaps this storm in a teacup. I know we're going to talk about not clapping in a few minutes for the speech that was there yesterday, but that a lot of people were saying, pointing out that Catherine Connolly didn't clap for all that long in 2022 when he gave a virtual address to the Oireachtas. She said during the campaign that she did, but that she wasn't going to make a big song and dance, for want of a better word. That's obviously me paraphrasing of it, because of her objections to what NATO was doing in war in the world, and that instead perhaps a more dignified silence would have been a better response to the speech. So no doubt that was all there, but it certainly was much less warm than the meetings later in the day.
Okay, and now he reached Leinster House. There was an awful lot of palaver. I thought all the people lined up to shake his hand, and even as he walked down the steps, there were people in the aisle kind of grasping his hand or trying to grasp his hand. You know, when you consider this man is leading a country which has been invaded by Russia, he's a lot more to do than, you know, these extended niceties, shall we say.
Yeah, and I thought you could tell that on his face. It looked strained, like this is a man who is literally on the other line or between all of these meetings and hellos and being toured through Leinster House, is getting briefed on whether or not a massive part of his country is going to be lost to Russia and whether the US is going to have to back him. So, of course, his mind is going to be somewhat elsewhere. And it was interesting just being in the Dáil chamber, in that obviously an unusual sitting of both Dáil and Shannon in the same chamber. And there was a little bit of elbowing and fighting and people getting there early. I mean, there were people in the chamber from an hour and a half beforehand to try and make sure that they got a good seat, be that on the row or whatever, to the point where even some of the senior ministers were pushed out of the row. James Lawless in particular, that they were usually in, although it turned out fine for him because he got to barrel over somebody to get to Vladimir Zelensky and shake his hand. But there was an awful lot of that. And it just, I think you're right. It did feel a little bit weird. On one hand, you obviously want to give him the big welcome, and this is sort of the standard fare. Whenever you get a world leader who is popular, you would have seen the same with Joe Biden, people trying to fight for seats to get close to him and get the picture or the selfie or whatever. But this is a man who's facing a massive existential crisis at the same time.
I thought it was all a bit provincial, actually.
Yeah, you could. I could see that. But how else, I suppose, do they handle it? Do they do a respectful standoff? Do they not give him the handshakes? It would be the comeback, I guess.
The speech was 13 and a bit minutes long, and it was very much on point and very well delivered, in spite of being delivered in not his first language, not even his second language. His first language was Russian, actually. Second language, Ukrainian. Third language, English. But I thought it was an object lesson in how to make a great political speech.
Really, really well crafted. And actually, all of his messages from the press conference before that into the speech, I thought was particularly well handled. Even when he had awkward questions, like at the press conference, he was asked about Ireland reducing some of the supports or how long Ukrainian refugees who are arriving now can stay here. And he handled it very well, saying in Ukrainian that he was brought up to say thank you to all sort of help, whether that's increasing or decreasing. And we're massively appreciative to Ireland. So he handled all of that really well. But the speech was drew fantastic parallels between Ireland and Ukraine, talking about two nations who know more than any other what it's like to fight for your independence or for your statehood or just to be you, and thanking Ireland when some societies are fatiguing about the news of the war, that Ireland's voice is not turning quieter. A couple of other, you know, just really strong lines drawing parallels between peace in Ireland, peace in Ukraine, how they could do it. And at all times, I mean, you know, he said he did have one, I suppose, what you would consider a pop at Russia when he talked about the commission that needs to be set up afterwards for looking at war crimes and reparations, and that you can't let people who are murderers go about pretending that they have done nothing. But other than that, it was a focus, a great focus in the speech on peace. One particular good passage where he talked about, you know, a strong country can invade another strong country can help resist that invasion, but it takes a world community in order to have a strong and a lasting peace, and that Ireland as a small country in a bigger block of the EU knows that very well.
Okay, let's talk about people before profit and deciding to stand but not applaud.
Yeah, so there was a few different sections. So firstly, before I think the cameras were rolling, Olena Zelenska and the team, the entourage, I suppose, that were with Vladimir Zelensky came into the chamber maybe about 8 or 10 minutes before he did. And everyone bar Richard Boyd Barrett and Paul Murphy stood and applauded and sort of said their congratulations to her. And then they got got seated up in the Distinguished Visitors Gallery, and in came Vladimir Zelensky about 10 minutes later. For that part, the two People Before Profit TDs did stand up, but they didn't clap. The entire rest of the chamber did. And then post the speech, it was much of the same. So again, those two TDs, Ruth Coppinger, the other of that group who wasn't in the chamber at the time, stood up. Didn't choose to clap for Vladimir Zelensky. There was a couple around them, so the likes of Seamus Healy, a few of the Sinn Féin TDs, Sean Crow, who did sort of a small clap and then stopped, almost as if there was a little sphere of influence over there that was like, we'll give you respect, but not too much. And Danny Healy-Ray as well was the other one who sort of seemed to couldn't make up his mind whether he was going to stand or clap or not, and ended up sort of half standing.
Why did they bother to turn up? Do you know?
Yeah,
if you don't agree with the man being there and fighting the fight he's fighting, existential fight in Russia, if you don't agree with all of that, just don't turn up. Don't, you know, why bother if you don't really believe in what the man stands for?
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
All right, remember, the machine knows if you're lying. First statement, Carvana will give you a real offer on your car all online.
False.
True, actually. You can sell your car in minutes.
False? That's gotta be.
True again. Carvana will pick up your car from your door, or you can drop it off at one of their car vending machines.
Sounds too good to be true, so true.
Finally caught on. Nice job. Honesty isn't just their policy, it's their entire model. Sell your car today, too.
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.
Yeah, look, you'd have to ask them that as to why they did show up and decided to go there in the first place. Where they weren't I suppose you could say, and probably the argument they would put forward is that they have supported Ukraine throughout the war, that they think the war is unjust and that Russia should get out of Ukraine. I think Richard Boyd Barrett has said that quite a few times in the Dáil and in press statements, but that what they don't agree with is that there is a military solution to this, that they should be beefing up NATO and that the West and Europe should be getting involved in the war. So maybe there's an argument to show up there to say, yes, we support your country, just not the way things have been going on for the last while. And in fairness, I would imagine, I mean, looking at Vladimir Zelensky's speech, you'd have to ask them again. I could find very little in it that was warmongering or that they could oppose, but I'm sure they'll find something.
Yeah, well, it's interesting when you've got a big neighbour like Russia, as we, of course, had a very big neighbour for hundreds of years, deciding how our fate should unfold. You'd imagine that people before profit and people like them, like Sinn Féin, would have a deep understanding of the travails of the Ukrainian people at the moment. But anyway, how did the whole thing wrap up?
So it wrapped up, they had that speech, Zelensky sort of made his way through Leinster House, then left off, and he flew out yesterday evening. And it was sort of an interesting not a dull end to it, that's unfair, but one that was sort of away from the media limelight maybe. There was meetings that were going on, for example, with Elena Zelenska around the same time in Trinity College that Mary Butler was leading on, and different meetings with, particularly she had a big focus on education when she was here yesterday, talking about a lot of the Ukrainian students who are now in third level education who might have come over here in their teens and didn't know how long they'd be expecting to be here and are bedding into life. So that was interesting. But now, obviously, look, in the evening, it very quickly turned to Zelensky was going to get back home. And as that Dáil speech ended, was around the same time that the meeting between Witkoff and Kushner and Vladimir Putin was starting. So I'm sure that's where the vast majority of their attention went. And it does look like there's no real white smoke out of that, no progress made on those big issues that Zelensky talked about in his press conference yesterday, the territory and the money and the future of, or I suppose the guarantee of peace in Ukraine, whether that comes through NATO forces, UN, EU, some sort of peacekeeping guarantee.
Okay, and if we are called upon, the Taoiseach has assured President Zelensky that we will not be found wanting for such a force. Sean Defoe, News Talk political correspondent and host of the Let Me Explain podcast, thank you very much. Listening to our conversation is Professor of Politics at DCU, Donacha Bachoin. Donacha, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, you were watching it all. You were on duty for RTE television yesterday. But the news coming from Moscow was, I suppose, bleak from a Ukrainian point of view, but not unexpected.
No, I mean, there's a lot of false reports about a peace process, a Trump-sponsored peace process, a US-Russia peace process. And I think this fundamentally misunderstands Russia's core objectives, because Russia doesn't want peace. I mean, Russia is the only country that hasn't agreed to a ceasefire. It won't freeze the conflict. It won't stop killing and bombing people. It could do that in the morning. A simple instruction from Putin would stop all of that. It doesn't want peace. What does it want? It wants to achieve its goals in Ukraine. If America can help them with that, to do it without fighting for longer, they'll listen. If not, Putin has made it clear, one way or the other, militarily or diplomatically, they will take the territory they want to take. They will occupy the areas, and they will, you know, take the people as well who live there. Because I am always a little bit worried when we talk too much about territory, because, of course, these are the homes of people who live there. Some of them, of course, have come to Ireland. Many of them are displaced in other parts of the world, and they don't have a home to go back to.
Now, it looks as if, with whatever message that Witkoff brought from the United States, that Rubio may be winning the argument with Trump at the moment, because he would be less pro-Russia than the others.
I think Rubio has very little influence. I mean, there was a very humiliating, though characteristic, incident in the last day or two where his cabinet, Kennedy and Rubio, were extolling the virtues of Trump, you know, saying how wonderful he was. This was the best cabinet ever, how he was a master, a genius. Trump's eyes were closed throughout while Rubio was talking. So he couldn't.
And he was. I've seen that video. He was asleep. I mean, it's not that he was resting his eyes, you know, that kind of way. He was fast asleep.
Yeah. No, and Rubio knows that, you know, his own influence evaporates the moment that he loses favor with Trump. So he's in no way a dynamic here. I mean, they all live, you know, for the favor of Donald Trump. And Donald Trump's approach to this from the beginning is that Russia is the big prize. He wants to open business relations with Russia. And that's why the 28-point plan talked about the profits that the US could make with this alliance with Russia. And indeed, of course, they have that critical earths deal with Ukraine. So, you know, the Russians aren't, they know that the Americans are thinking this way. And that's why Steve Witkoff has been 6 times to Moscow. He's never been to Ukraine. And Volodymyr Zelensky yesterday at the press conference at government buildings made it clear that Steve Witkoff was welcome to come to Ukraine. But Steve Witkoff has never gone. The whole emphasis has been on finding out what Russia wants, then repeating that to Ukraine and saying that Ukraine and Europe are somehow obstacles to peace if they don't give Russia what it needs.
Well, maybe it runs in the real estate business that people like Trump, who used a heel spur to get out of service and avoid Vietnam, that Witkoff is simply scared to go to Ukraine.
I think that he just doesn't see them as having agency. I mean, they treat Ukraine as they look at Russia. So, for example, they know that if Putin agrees to something, Russia is more or less part of that agreement. They assume that Zelensky has the power to sign away Ukraine's fate, as if Ukrainians themselves, you know, won't have any agency in this. And we know that were Zelensky to sign up to a capitulation, a surrender that didn't protect Ukraine's interests in the future, I think it would be politically suicidal for him. He wouldn't stay president. So he's only there at the behest of the Ukrainian people. But the same cannot be said of Russia, of course, and Putin. I mean, they're fundamentally different policies. One is a democracy and one is a dictatorship.
Now, the question, though, of Putin, does he need desperately to come out on top in whatever peace process, so-called, is entered into, that the deal done has got to give him the Donbass, or his own position in Russia is vulnerable because he's put his own country through an awful lot of pain?
Yes, but the problem is that, you know, the Russian people may go through the pain at Putin's behest, but again, in a dictatorship, he doesn't have to worry too much about that. Many people, of course, have left Russia. They've gone to Kazakhstan and Georgia to escape conscription. They've conscripted, you know, people from the prisons, ethnic minorities. Power in Russia is far more important to Putin than victory in Ukraine, much as he'd like it.
But I'm saying, does a failure to achieve his stated targets of this so-called special military operation, his failure to achieve that would make him vulnerable, possibly to people who'd even be worse than Putin?
Well, yes. I mean, you know, for dictatorships, they rely on the perception of being invulnerable. They have a monopoly, of course, of violence. And once they lose that perception, and nothing kind of underlines that more than defeat in a war, then they are, of course, vulnerable. The emperor then has no clothes. We saw what happened, for example, in 1982 when the Argentinian dictatorship invaded the Falkland Islands. You know, had they won, of course, it would have been a big, you know, legitimization of that regime. But once they lost, the regime collapsed soon afterwards. So there are precedents for that, and Putin's certainly aware of them.
Because sometimes things turn very, very quickly. I mean, I'm thinking back to Romania when the fall of the president there was literally, it happened in over a period of 2 or 3 days.
Oh, absolutely. And I was in East Germany in August of 1989, obviously a much younger man. And I was being told by the communist leadership there that East Germany was the most successful communist country. They were celebrating 40 years in existence. And in November, just 3 months later, the Berlin Wall was punctured. And by the end of the year, East Germany was effectively no more. The following year, it was united with the rest of Germany. And as you say, Romania is another example. And Russia has seen it in recent times. I mean, with the rebellion of Yevgeny Prigozhin, where he marched 800 kilometers into Russia without any resistance, came within a stone's throw of Moscow. So, no, these things can come down very quickly. And, of course, there are all those precedents that I think would keep Putin awake at night of, you know, Saddam Hussein and Muammar Gaddafi in Libya, where what seemed to be, you know, invulnerable strongmen met a very unsavory end. And I think that's the thing that he wants to protect himself from ultimately.
Now, some of the comments coming in, I've never voted for People Before Profit and I have no intention of doing so, but I do share their view on the Ukraine war. I struggle to understand why the supply of weapons to Ukraine continues when it's clear that more arms only leads to more unnecessary loss of life. So, from that texter, the messages roll over.
It's a remarkable position to have because, as I said, Ukraine has said they want a ceasefire. They're willing to a ceasefire. This is what they were asked of from Donald Trump. So they don't want to fight. They want they want peace. Nobody wants peace more than Ukrainians who have suffered for so long and suffered so much. But you know, if Russia is coming with armaments and they're coming with tanks and guns, you know, simply not helping Ukrainians defend themselves condemns more Ukrainians to die. I mean, Putin has made it clear that he won't stop until he takes the territory and the people that he feels is rightfully his. He, of course, wants to see the end of Ukraine as a sovereign, independent state. So that's simply an argument. That's like seeing somebody on the street being beaten up and thinking that somehow you're helping them by not throwing them something to defend themselves. Actually, you just make their suffering prolonged.
And I should remind that text of what happened in Bucha when the Russians were unfettered. What they did when they came in. So that would be the fate that could await a lot of Ukrainians if they simply rolled over.
Absolutely. And that was one of the themes again in Volodymyr Zelensky's speech to the Oireachtas yesterday about accountability for war crimes. The original 28-point plan that was Russia conceived but America delivered talked about indemnifying essentially Russia from this, giving an amnesty of some sort. Of course, that's what Russia expects, but that's something that we might expect both from Russia and the United States, because they don't accept the jurisdiction of the International Criminal Court. They're not members of it. They don't accept the jurisdiction of the International Court of Justice. For small states like Ireland, for smaller states like Ukraine, which are, you know, suffering what they're suffering now, I mean, these are the courts of international opinion. This is what means that all this suffering, you know, was not for nothing, that at least the perpetrators will be brought to justice at some stage in the future. And there's no interest in Moscow or D.C. for seeing these war crimes being investigated, being exposed, and, of course, the perpetrators being brought to account. And this is, of course, a travesty in the 21st century when we thought we'd moved on from those kinds of...
And later in the program, we will be talking about the likelihood of Hexeth facing the music for the murders in the Caribbean later on. Anyway, Donnacha, thank you very much for joining us. Donnacha Bachoin is Professor of Politics at DCU.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.